This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to www.ukwineshow.co.uk. We're here with Martin Turner from Riedel. He's been with Riedel now for 10 years and is responsible for the retail and on-trade for London. Martin, how are you?
Yeah, very well. Good to meet you, Chris.
I think what we'll do is we'll start off with a bit of a history. I understand it's your 250th anniversary this year.
Yes, they started in 1756, back in Bohemia, what's now the Czech Republic. Ended up in Austria last century, which is where their main production is. Two factories in Austria, and they've just welcomed their 12th generation.
You guys have been making glasses now for quite a while. Have you always had a real focus on glasses, or where's that come from?
No, when they started, they were industrial glass manufacturers. It was only last century, the ninth generation, Klaus Joseph, who became interested in developing different shapes for wine glasses. Up until then, they'd done lots of giftware and suites of glasses, as a lot of the glass companies were doing. But if you bought a suite of glasses from Riedel or from anyone at that time, you would just get a suite of glasses that, although different sizes, a glass for water, a glass for red, a glass for white, one for port, sherry, champagne flute, they'd all be much the same size. It was Klaus Joseph who pioneered the idea of different shapes and sizes for wine glasses.
How did he get his ideas from?
Well, he was a wine drinker based in Europe, so he used to visit the winemakers a lot. And he noticed that the different wine producers and the winemakers all drank from different shape glasses. The Burgundians had their favourite shape, Bordelais had their favourite shape. In cognac, they used to taste from a small tulip-shaped glass, the Spanish Capita for sherry. So he started looking into whether there was something in this. And because he had the capability to play around with glass shape, he could design and produce anything he wanted to. That's how he started.
Okay. So he was looking at the wines and then seeing what sort of shape was matching the wines. Is that to do with the way the wine works in the mouth and the palate?
Yeah, exactly. It's all purely a mechanical delivery of the wine and spirit from the glass onto your tongue, which I know sounds incredible. Most people, if you went to them and said, this wine will taste different from three different shaped glasses, they won't believe it's true. But it's something you can try at home. Just get out a straight-sided tumbler, maybe a brandy balloon, a martini glass, champagne flute, pour some red or white wine into them, and have a go and see what an amazing difference the shape makes.
So you've got different glass shapes, but how does it affect the nose and palate? What's going on in your nose and palate?
When you're tasting wine, or in fact when you're tasting food, your enjoyment comes primarily from your nose and not your tongue, as a lot of people think. The tongue's actually a very primitive organ for tasting. It just picks up five things. Your nose, on the other hand, is a very sophisticated organ and can differentiate between 10 to 20,000 smells.
Gosh, that's quite a bit.
Yeah. It's something, again, you can try at home. Hold your nose, have a sip of wine, release your nose, have another sip of wine, and it'll taste different. Yeah. When you have a cold, you can't taste anything. Everything tastes of cardboard.
So what does your palate have? What's going on in the palate?
Well, the palate has different perception on different parts of the tongue. You pick up sweetness on a different part from where you pick up sourness, for instance.
That's more like the acidity of the wine?
So what we're looking at is sweet, sour, salt, bitter. And there is a fifth taste called umami, which has always been around, recognised by the Eastern world, not so much the Western world. It's that sort of savoury, yeasty taste. But when we're looking at wine, we can also discount salt. So we're just looking at three things. We're looking at sweetness from fruit, we're looking at acidity, and we're looking at any bitterness that comes from tannins or white wine that has been oaked.
So when you're talking about the delivery of the wine, you're talking about getting the wine to hit different elements of the palate.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Because your tongue perceives these things in very specific areas, we can mechanically deliver the wine or the spirit to a part of the tongue to either lessen your perception. If, for instance, a wine is too tannic or too sweet or too acidic, we can lessen your perception of that wine. Or if something is lacking in acidity, it needs a bit of backbone to it, then we can deliver the wine to emphasise some acidity.
Well, let's have a look at that. We've got a Sauvignon Blanc glass over here. It's reasonably narrow, very long, but without a big bowl shape to it. What's going on there?
Well, what the shape of this glass does, and this is one of our best all-round tasting shapes, it's quite a generous capacity. It holds about a half bottle of wine, but the shape means that it delivers the wine in a thin stream from the tip of the tongue, so you'll pick up some sweetness, Then it goes down the middle of the tongue and hits the back of your tongue, back of your throat. What happens is it bypasses the acidity receptors.
So the wine goes down the centre of the tongue, avoids the acidity on the sides.
That's exactly right. What happens is it ends up at the back of the tongue, so you get a nice balance. Everything that's in within the wine, you don't get too much acidity, because Sauvignon Blanc is a nice, crisp, refreshing, acidic drink anyway. That's why people drink it, for the zing, for the zest. But some Sauvignons, when you're drinking them, they can be a bit too acidic. So we downplay the acidity, bring out the other things.
Okay, that's quite good. The other glass we've got here is a Pinot Noir glass. It's really quite a bulbous shape, just slightly wider at the top, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
What are you trying to do with this?
Well, for a red wine glass, you always want a bigger bowl anyway. Basically, the difference between white wines and red wines is that in the production process of red wines, the skins come into play, and sometimes the stalks even. So you're looking at an extra ingredient in red wine that isn't there in white wine. White wine is simply made from the flesh of the grape and the juice. So because of that extra ingredient, red wines do have another level of complexity. So you will always need a bigger bowl for a red wine glass. Having said that, this glass does much the same as a Sauvignon Blanc glass, in that it will direct the wine to the tip of the tongue, down the middle, and end up at the back. The way it does this is purely from the shape. It's just the gradient of the side of the bowl. It's all about how you hold the glass, how you hold your head, almost how you hold your arm as you're drinking. And again, I know this sounds difficult to imagine if you're just looking at a catalogue, thinking, well, why is that glass for Burgundy? Why is that glass for Bordeaux? But it's something you can try at home. A martini glass, if you imagine drinking from that, very straight-sided, V-shape, you hardly have to move your head, have to get up from the couch, and you can drink your martini. Compare that to a tall, skinny, straight-sided champagne flute, where you've got to really knock your head back and lift the glass up high to get drink from that. So that's what we're looking at. It's so purely mechanics.
Those champagne, those long, narrow champagne flutes, they're a bit like that Sauvignon Blanc glass, aren't they? Where it's shooting the champagne down the centre of your palate.
Yeah.
And not, because champagne's got quite a lot of acidity to it, hasn't it?
Champagne, although a fantastic drink, the acidity levels are so high. Within the Champagne region in France, it has more dentists per capita than any other country in the world. Because it's enamel stripping stuff if you drink it regularly.
Yeah.
The acidity is very much in evidence, so you can afford to downplay it.
Sometimes when you're drinking a real high acid wine, it feels like your enamel's dripping off your teeth sometimes. Yeah. Okay, and the third glass we've got here is a Cabernet Merlot glass.
Yep.
And it's, again, it's not as bulbous. It's still quite a big glass. And the at the end, it's about the same size opening. Is that right?
Yeah. This is a good contrast to the our Pinot Noir or Red Burgundy glass, in that it's a very similar size bowl and exactly the same size aperture. The only difference is the shape.
You mean aperture, the amount that you get into your mouth?
Yeah. Yep. It's purely the contours of the bowl. When you're drinking wine from our Bordeaux glass, the wine will drop very gently and slowly onto the front half of your tongue. So what you're doing is you're picking up the fruits. You're emphasising some acidity, which you can afford to do because Cabernet as a grape is quite low in acidity. But what we're trying to do is stop the wine getting towards the back of your tongue, which is where you pick up the tannins.
Yeah, so Cabernet is quite a tannic wine.
The tannins are already much in evidence, so we don't want to emphasise those anymore.
You can always tell tannins on a wine because if you rub your tongue over the roof of your mouth, you get that sort of gripping sensation.
Yeah.
Okay, but what I don't understand is I always swish the wine around my mouth and give it a bit of a slurp and do all sorts of terrible things to the wine.
Mm-hmm.
If you're trying to keep the wine in the centre of your palate, won't it get all swashed around? And what's going on there?
Yeah, that's a question that's often asked. When I said earlier that the tongue is actually quite a basic organ compared to the nose, which is a very sophisticated organ, the brain is a very lazy organ in that it likes its first impression. It's amazingly difficult to get your brain to make a second impression, to change its mind. So even if you're hanging upside down and swishing it around your mouth, your brain will still be thinking, well, no, I picked up acidity first.
Yeah.
So that's what we're doing. We're just giving you
first
recognition.
It's a bit like first impressions on...
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Okay. Now that we've had a look at the three different glasses, what sort of things should you be looking for in a glass?
The things to look out for in any wine glass is, first of all, a good shape to the bowl. We call it the cut-off egg shape. So imagine your egg, you've sliced off the top. That's a good shape for a glass.
So you want it tempering in?
Yeah. Within that, it obviously can vary in size, but you need it going back in on itself. That's to keep the aromas in. Yeah. The worst thing you can drink wine from is something like a Paris goblet, which is so straight-sided, you lose all the aromas over the edge.
Yeah, and also, if you give it a bit of a swirl, it can, if it's shaped outwards, you can lose the wine onto your neighbour.
Yeah. And the next thing is to have a big capacity for that reason, that you need to be able to swirl your wine, to release the aromas, to smell the wine, to start enjoying the wine. So all of our glasses are very big. Deceptive, because they don't look big, but they will hold usually at least a half a bottle of wine.
Half a bottle of wine, that's a good drink.
Pretty good, but obviously only fill it up to the widest point of the glass, or the, what we call the belly. So most of our glasses, that would be about a third full.
Third full. And that's so you can swirl it around, yep, and get some oxygen into it.
And after that, after the good shape, the good size, you also need a cut polished rim.
What do you mean by that?
If you look at glasses in pubs, some restaurants, if you feel the rim, you can actually feel it's quite thick.
It's got a
rolled
lip almost,
yeah,
to it.
It's the rolled rim, which is an economical way of finishing off a glass in the production process. What Riedel do, even with their entry-level glasses, we always do a cut polished rim. So you end up with a very fine lip to your glass. There's nothing worse than a rolled rim to a glass, because that acts as a barrier between you and the wine. Nothing should come between you and the wine.
Exactly. So how do you do that? Do you just cut it, and then why don't people cut their lips on that?
It would be razor sharp, yes, because it's sliced off with a laser. But what they do is they very gently and slowly heat it back up, and the glass or the lead crystal will melt just enough to seal it.
Okay, Martin, thanks very much. Just a quick one. What sort of wine tip would you recommend for us?
Well, as a glass seller, I would say, and this is a question I get asked a lot, buy one glass for the wine that you drink most of, because we do have an enormous range of glasses. So buy the one that you would drink the most, and also spend on one glass what you would spend on one bottle of wine.
Thanks very much, Martin.
And, thank you very much.
Cheers.
Cheers.